Welcome back to Disclaimers Aside, a bi-weekly podcast where I share the stories of people in my community, Disclaimers Aside. I'm your host, Aisara Amadu, and let's dive into this week's episode. I do want to say there's been a lot going on in Palestine recently, and so if you haven't been keeping up with what's happening, please do your research, learn about what's happening in Palestine right now, because it is absolutely devastating, and it's not getting the coverage it deserves, especially in the mainstream media. There's been a lot of misinformation happening in the mainstream media. So unfortunately, this is one of those cases where it is important to be getting information from social media, but make sure that you're getting your sources like checked. Make sure that you are listening to Palestinian voices in this cause. Make sure that if you're Muslim, that you're using the power of dua. Dua has such a huge power. And as Muslims, that is something that is free. That is something that we all have access to, that is easy for us. Being able to do things like protests, being able to do other things are a privilege, but dua is free and every single one of us can make dua. So please make dua for all of the lives lost in Palestine. I'm gonna have some resources linked in the show notes. I'm gonna link a podcast episode that I've listened to that does a very good job of like giving a basic comprehensive explanation of what's going on right now. It's an issue that I think that people like to conflate as complicated so that they don't have to reconcile with their position on the issue or take a stance on it. But if you don't take a stance, you're on the side of the oppressor. Do what you can, even if it's a small thing, it goes a long way. And if you have family in Palestine, my heart is with you. My dua, you are in my duas and prayers, and inshallah, one day Palestine will be free. Do our identities really matter? I want to talk about identity politics. Identity is a powerful thing. It's something that impacts all of our lives, and it influences the way we see ourselves, the way we see other people, how we find community, how we perceive ideas and systems. And I think it is something that is more than just an internal thing. It also affects external things like politics and institutions. So today I wanted to talk about identity politics. And before we get started, I do want to preface that for today's conversation, I'm mainly speaking from an American context because that's primarily what I've experienced and like what I've definitely been conditioned in. Disclaimers aside, my unpopular opinion for this week, I didn't really prepare one. So we're going to have to think of one on the spot today. I feel like my guests sometimes when I ask them like for their unpopular opinion and I tell them in advance to prepare one, but they don't. So then they have to think of one on the spot. So disclaimers aside, I want to talk about Palestine. So I'm going to tie my unpopular opinion to what's happening in Palestine right now. But disclaimers aside, my unpopular opinion for this week is that I think a lot of the times when it comes to the Israel-Palestine conflict, people can make it seem like a way more complicated issue than it actually is, to kind of just distract from the conversation and to not have to be forced to reconcile with their own political stance on the whole situation. And I'm not going to go too much in depth in this podcast episode about what's happening in Palestine right now, but I will have resources in the show notes, articles, things to just kind of learn more about the whole thing, just because we all have a job to stay informed and be informed. And I think the Israel-Palestine conflict is something, at least when you live in the US, that definitely gets distorted by Western media in a lot of ways. My heart goes out to, you know, all of the lives that are lost, you know, in this conflict and all of the violence that's ensuing. This past weekend, I actually went to the Palestine protest in San Francisco. Viva, viva Palestina! It was such a well-organized protest. They had speakers, they had chants going, and it was really a time for community and also just a time for the community to come and be together and be resilient and be strong and just to hope. I think a lot of the times when it comes to protests, especially protests of this nature, it's important to, you know, take your precautions and just to be careful, because it is a very dangerous time, especially if you are someone who supports Palestine, especially being on college campuses. I've heard a lot of stories of students getting doxxed and just violence ensuing. So just be careful, be aware, continue to educate yourself. I will have some resources in the description box for you guys to check out. A relief for Gaza. I'm praying for, you know, all of the families that are affected by this ongoing conflict. It really does feel like a conflict that just never ends. And it's something that, you know, every year we see how hurt this community is by the whole conflict. And every year we rally together and we protest and it seems like nothing is changing. And there's hope. There's definitely hope that inshallah one day Palestine will be free. Inshallah one day the Palestinian diaspora will be able to go back to their homeland. I think there's something just so psychologically traumatic of being separated from the motherland, and it's something horrifying to see. I think a lot of Black people in the diaspora can kind of understand a little bit of what that kind of feels like. It is definitely an issue that I think gets conflated as something that is complicated and divisive, and there's just a lot of noise. But I think that is a means that people kind of use to reduce the conflict to something that is less than it actually is, and to avoid having conversations about it. Before we can kind of dive into this conversation about identity politics, we got to start off with some definitions, especially with something as contentious as identity politics, because I think people definitely have very different perceptions of what identity politics is. Kind of the inspiration and what made me kind of want to have a conversation and about identity politics and make this a podcast episode was just kind of a culmination of things. Identity politics are something that we have been talking about in one of my classes this semester, taking a class on campaign media strategy. And identity politics has been something that we've been having ongoing discussions about in that class. Those discussions have really changed my perception of identity politics. And then it's funny because the week where we were really discussing identity politics, there was actually a panel happening at Lighthouse Masjid, which is this masjid that's in Oakland that I had been meaning to go to all of last year. So this was the perfect opportunity to go because they were doing a panel on identity politics. And I went for that conversation. I listened in and I feel like I learned so much from that conversation. Like, it was such a rich conversation that I think opened my eyes in a lot of ways. And they opened up the conversation just kind of by asking everyone, what does identity politics mean to you? And everyone just kind of went around and shared like their perception of things. And so I also wanted to do the same thing with this podcast episode and open it up to you guys so that you guys could kind of share what your guys' thoughts are on identity politics. So we will be talking about that towards the end. The main parts of this episode are going to be divided into some brief definitions. Then we're going to talk about how identity politics affects and is affected by politics. And then we're going to talk about the role of identity politics in Islam specifically. Then we're going to end off by diving into what you guys had to say about identity politics. So, identity, according to the Oxford Dictionary, is defined as the fact of being who or what a person or thing is. It can also mean a close similarity or affinity to. And then politics is the activities associated with the governance of a country or other area, especially the debate or conflict among individuals or parties having or hoping to achieve power. Kind of convoluted, but those are the definitions we're going to be working off of today. I think another important definition that I found for politics specifically is the assumptions or principles relating or inherent in a sphere. theory or thing, especially when concerned with power and status in a society. And I think this definition is important to include in this conversation because it recognizes the fact that discourse has power, that the way society speaks or communicates about things manifests power and informs society's perception of things, which I think really does tie into this discussion of identity politics. For example, the way we perceive gender today is completely different from the way we may have perceived or talked about gender 30 years ago, and that is because of discourse. And that has real-world implications on politics. Identity politics, according to Oxford Dictionary, is a tendency for people of a particular religion, ethnic group, social background, etc., to form exclusive political alliances, moving away from traditional broad-based party politics. I think with the identity politics, there's definitely this implication that division is being created within communities and interest groups, and I think that's where a lot of like the negative critique of identity politics comes into play. My initial perception of identity politics is that while it can be divisive, it can create division and impede conversations, I do think identity politics are an important lens to consider politics through. Our identities have power. They shape our realities and our experiences. Because an individual's identity has so much power over their psyche, identity naturally bleeds into institutions and structures of power. For example, my identity as a Black woman influences my political persuasion. It impacts the way I vote, it impacts the politicians I support, and it shapes the way certain policies directly impact me. So it definitely does have quite a huge impact. My identity has a huge impact on the way that I engage in politics. Being a Black woman makes me more likely to align myself with a political candidate who is committed to things like prison reform or fighting voter suppression in America. And I kind of see the term of identity politics as more describing the relationship between identities and politics rather than this kind of negative critique. Kind of describes the relationship of how the things that we experience in our identities inform our political persuasion or the way that we may engage in politics. So I really didn't understand a lot of the negative attributes that people tend to attribute with the term identity politics, because I kind of see it more as like language to describe something that's already existing, like an intrinsic process that's already happening inside of all of us. But I guess delving into the topic more, I realize the role identity politics has in our current society is something that definitely takes more of an active role. So let's delve into how identity politics affects and is affected by politics in the American context. As we've kind of established, identity politics can be a really powerful tool for messaging. This is something we discussed in my class recently, specifically political messaging. So the messaging that happens with political candidates. Just like the notion of identity can be used to bring us together under collective identity, it can also be used to tear communities apart. For example, with this whole idea of us versus them that is very, very successful in messaging, and it definitely gets a lot of attention. This is a sentiment we see a lot in anti-immigration rhetoric, for example, like this whole idea of like we need to protect our resources, our opportunities, what we have from them. We also see this narrative a lot of the times with Islamophobic rhetoric. Because the US is historically intertwined with evangelical Christian tradition, and the way that 9/11 and the war on terror accelerated the American public's perception of Muslim Americans, a lot of Islamophobic rhetoric positions Muslims as a community whose existence inherent and growth is inherently a threat against the dominant evangelical Christian order. So when people fall outside of the dominant identity of power, they're seen as a threat to the dominant socio-political system. The way politicians express or don't express their identity politics matters, especially when those politicians are people of color. And this is something that's explored in a book called Why We're Polarized by Ezra Klein. It's a book that I had to
read actually for my campaign media strategy class, and it is such an interesting book. I definitely recommend all of you guys read it. I'll have the link to it in the show notes if you guys are interested. It kind of is an exploration of American political polarization and why it's called Why We're Polarized, because it explains kind of the origins of how politics got so polarized in the US. It's written in a very interesting way, and it's definitely something that I have just been interested in the past few years. But I do want to read a passage from it because I feel like it really explains the core of like what I'm trying to discuss here in this podcast episode today. This is a passage from the introduction. Unfortunately, the term identity politics has been weaponized. It is most often used by speakers to describe politics as practiced by members of historically marginalized groups. If you're Black and you're worried about police brutality, that's identity politics. If you're a woman and you're worried about the male-female pay gap, that's identity politics. But if you're a rural gun owner decrying universal background checks as tyranny, or a billionaire CEO complaining that high tax rates demonize success, or a Christian insisting on nativity scenes in public squares, well, that's just good old-fashioned politics. The term identity politics in this usage obscures rather than illuminates. It's used to diminish and discredit the concerns of weaker groups by making them look self-interested, special pleading in order to clear the agenda for the concerns of stronger groups, which are framed as more rational, proper topics for political debate. But in wielding identity as a blade, we have lost it as a lens, blinding ourselves in a bid for political advantage. We are left searching in vain for what we refuse to allow ourselves to see. Again, I think this passage really does highlight how the term identity politics has been weaponized, especially against people of color. I think when a person of color or a person from a marginalized identity is engaging in politics and speaking on issues that specifically impact their community, a lot of the times what they have to say becomes dismissed because of their identity. And I think that's where the harm and the malinformed use of identity politics comes into play. Klein says it right: all politics are influenced by identity. Our identities shape the way that we perceive politics, the way we engage in politics, the way political legislation or political system affects our own identity. So it is an already occurring relationship, and I think the term identity politics just describes that relationship, but it really does get weaponized. Our identity shapes the way we see power, the way we see political systems, our values. It isn't the only determinant of our political persuasion, but I think it definitely has a large role in it. But I think the challenges really come when marginalized identities are accused of being ruled by their identity or being reduced by their identity, because what it results in is voices being silenced. It discredits what they have to say on the basis of their identity, and that becomes dangerous because that's how you eventually lead into the slippery slope of taking away people's voices. There's also an inverse relationship with identity politics that's really, really important to talk about. And this brings me to my conversation on how politicians and political institutions can exploit identity. We see this a lot in performative activism. We see this a lot in politicians campaigning off the backs of marginalized communities and breaking the promises they made to constituents. I think this is a relationship that a lot of people experience or see that makes them hate identity politics. But it's when a politician recognizes an issue that matters to a marginalized community and they exploit it as one of their platforms in order to get elected, but then don't actually follow through with representing kind of the promises that they made in their campaigns. And it's something that we see a lot in broader politics. It's something you see in like local politics, it's something you see in campus politics, it happens all throughout politics. And I think it becomes all the more harmful or hurtful when identity plays a role, because identity means so much to each and every one of us. When that betrayal is mixed in with identity, it makes the betrayal hurt even more to the actual community being affected. I want to talk about the role of identity politics in Islam Because definitely when I think of identity politics, a lot comes to mind when I think about like Islam and the Muslim community. So as I mentioned, one of the main inspirations behind this week's podcast episode was the panel that I attended at Lighthouse. And in that conversation, two panelists discussed identity politics' role in the Muslim community, as well as the way that it affects Muslims engaging in larger politics. They kind of discussed the way that identity can positively and both negatively impact the ummah. So for those of you guys who are listening, we're not familiar with what the term ummah means. It's Arabic for community. In Islam, one of the core values is community. Community is so, so important. One of my favorite, I don't know if it's a hadith or just a quote, but it's the one that goes, the believers and their mutual kindness, compassion, and sympathy are just like one body. When one of the limbs suffers, the whole body responds to it with wakefulness and fever. It's just this kind of metaphor that the ummah is one body, and when one part of the community is hurting, that affects the entire community. And it's this whole idea of just community and how empathy is at the core of community. It's the root of community. And do you really have community if you don't have empathy for one another? For me, like, the concept of ummah is personally one of the most beautiful aspects of Islam. The idea that no matter where you go in the world, no matter where you're from, what your background is, what your life experiences have been, no matter your class or your gender, you share this bond and a sense of community with that other person because you are both Muslim. I think it's a beautiful aspect of being Muslim, especially in the West, where it can be isolating coming from a marginalized identity. However, a lot of the times, this value or the sense of ummah can be weaponized against people who experience discrimination within the Muslim community. So an example that I personally can relate to, I've personally experienced or seen, and I've heard a lot of other people's experiences with this, is anti-blackness within the Muslim community. It's something that pervades in a lot of cultures within the Muslim community. And a lot of the times, discourse around that and around things like colorism is kind of met with this response of like, stop creating division within the ummah. And let's unpack that for a moment, because I think this response is one that really does depict the way that identity politics can be weaponized against marginalized identities, just as the idea of identity politics can be weaponized against politicians of color when they speak about racial injustice. I think a similar thing happens in the Muslim community, where sometimes the Muslim community can dismiss injustices on a societal level by weaponizing this idea of identity politics. This idea of there are no black Muslims and white Muslims, there are just Muslims. And yes, my Muslim identity is something that I see as all-encompassing, but when I'm interacting with other Muslims in Muslim spaces, my black identity is not something that just can be erased. It is something that is very real, at least in this world. My blackness is something that influences the way that I'm perceived by and treated by other Muslims. It affects like who wants to stand next to me in salah. One of the things that I experience like on a daily basis is like the whole thing of salams. Like when you see another Muslim, you're supposed to say assalamu alaikum, which means peace be upon you. And they're supposed to respond wa alaikum assalam in return, returning the salams back. And it's something that as Muslims, like, we're all supposed to do when we see other Muslims. And it's just crazy to me that as a black Muslim woman, I will say salams to people and they will like fully see me, fully hear me, and will not say salams back. It's something that I experience on a daily basis on campus, and it's kind of chilled. It's had like almost like a chilling effect on me in the sense that like I've kind of stopped saying salams as much as I used to before I came to Berkeley, which is really sad because, you know, that is something that is so important in Islam, and that's a way that we're supposed to find community. And like, when you say salams to people, you get good deeds from it. And so it's something that I have to like eventually unlearn, because it shouldn't, it's unfortunate, but it shouldn't have a chilling effect on me. But having a conversation about that shouldn't be dismissed on the basis of we're one ummah, stop creating division in the ummah. Another experience is a lot of the discrimination or the perception that Black Muslims are perceived as having less knowledge. Something that I've heard is that like Black Muslim scholars are just like not as knowledgeable as Arab and Desi scholars. I could list off so many other experiences. I'm not really going to get into some of the more traumatic experiences that I've personally experienced or that I've heard other people in the Black Muslim community experiencing, but there's a lot of anti-Blackness that occurs within the Muslim community. I want to make it clear that just because I experience anti-Blackness or colorism, that doesn't mean that I necessarily attribute that those human flaws to Islam as a theory or as a religion. It's like, it's something that is societally, that's rooted in culture. It's rooted in white supremacy, and white supremacy is a human man-made thing. So it is a human flaw. But I do think that this is an example of where identity politics as a framework can be necessary to give voice to these experiences of marginalized communities, because it gives language to even be able to discuss something like anti-Blackness or colorism within the Muslim community. And this is part of the reason why I'm just really hesitant to see identity politics as a wholly bad thing. I do think that it can be very divisive and it can create division and there can be negative impacts of it, but I don't necessarily see it as a wholly bad thing. I do want to talk about the recent Jubilee video, because this is something that's also been on my mind. If you guys don't know, Jubilee is like this YouTube channel that does a lot of like YouTube videos where they kind of bring people together in conversation. Like they have a series called Middle Ground. And in the past, they've done like a liberal Muslims versus conservative Muslims. And then recently they did Muslims versus ex-Muslims, which, let's start off by talking about the first video. I just think the first video was kind of crazy, like, notion to even start with. I think the notion of like liberal Muslim versus conservative Muslim doesn't really make sense as like terms. I was having a conversation with a friend recently about this, and we were talking about how like those labels don't really apply to Islam, because liberal and conservative are political terms that are very specific to politics and that don't really translate to Islam or to a religious context. So it's kind of hard to like even just define like what is a liberal Muslim versus a conservative Muslim. Like you might say that like a liberal Muslim is a Muslim who like is more loose with their interpretation of Islam versus a conservative Muslim is someone who like is more rigid, but the connotation of liberal versus conservative doesn't really work, and it doesn't really fall on a binary in the same way in religion as it does with politics. Like Islam is just not, it doesn't really translate. So I feel like when I'm like thinking back on that video, even just the whole premise that whole video was created on just doesn't really make sense to me. But I watched that video, it was kind of crazy. My sister was actually gonna go on that video, which is really funny. She was like invited to be one of the speakers in that video, and she ended up saying no because she was just kind of scared of the idea of like putting her views on Islam out there in a very permanent way and like possibly regretting things down the line. And I think, I don't know if I would go on one of these like Jubilee videos and talk about specifically my views on Islam. I think the most that I would do is like maybe go and talk about my experience with the hijab or my experience being a Black Muslim, like just something more detached from like the actual theology of Islam. I don't think I would personally want to put myself in an environment where I'm like debating or arguing like the actual tenets of Islam, because I don't think in my journey of Islam I'm like at that point where I feel comfortable to do that. And I also think like I am very young, I'm 22 years old, and my perception and my thoughts and like my stance on things is going to change so much, and I don't necessarily want to put my viewpoints on that type of stuff out there on the internet in a very permanent way, especially in like this kind of media format where what you say can be is like cut down and distorted to something that at the end of the day is kind of for the purpose of entertainment. So I do think Jubilee has a lot of flaws, but I think it's really cool that they are making space for these types of conversations to be had, because I do think the concept of like having conversations with people that like have completely different beliefs than you is really important and really healthy, and something that like is definitely important, especially in this generation, because I think we do deal with and experience a lot of confirmation bias, and we're just constantly surrounded by people that like think the same way as us and believe the same way as us, and we're not really being challenged in our beliefs. But I watched that first video, and then recently they came out with Muslims versus ex-Muslims, which that one was even crazier, and it was just interesting to see a lot of the critiques with that, because they literally got a guy for the ex-Muslim side that was never even a Muslim, which is crazy, and he told Jubilee that he was not a Muslim, he had never been a Muslim, and they still put him in that video, which was very, very interesting. My roommates and I actually watched that video, and it took us like 3 hours to get through the whole video, because every single question, it was a 40-minute video, but every single question, we would sit there and have a conversation about the question, and I think that is really the benefit and the value that comes from Jubilee videos, is like watching it in community and having conversation and coming to common understandings or just like learning from other people's perspectives. So I thought both of those videos were very interesting, but I do think that a lot of the times with social media and the way that politics is presented on social media and the way identity politics is presented on social media, it can kind of be in a way that is not as constructive when we kind of reorient our intentions when it comes to like participating in these types of communication or like putting that type of communication out there in the world, like organizing these conversations. When we change the intention to find common understanding, to learn more, to challenge our beliefs rather than to like cancel each other, that creates more of like a healthier mindset with these types of things. But those videos were very interesting, and it is my goal to one day, inshallah, be in a Jubilee video. They're based in LA, so inshallah one day I gotta make dua, but you guys will see me in a Jubilee video, because I've always wanted to be in one, especially like the middle ground or like the political spectrum ones are really, really fun. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on the Jubilee video. I'm gonna have to ask you guys on the Disclaimers Aside podcast Instagram, because it was genuinely crazy. And if you guys haven't seen them, I'll link both of those videos in the show notes. I want to talk about what you guys had to say about identity politics. If you guys aren't following the Disclaimers Aside podcast Instagram, make sure to go follow it. That's kind of where I try and make space to expand on the conversations that I kind of talk about on the podcast. I asked you guys to submit, what are your guys' thoughts on identity politics? So I got a few responses that I'm going to share. First one is that it's reductive and actually erases parts of your identity. I think this is kind of just pointing to a lot of like the ways that identity politics can create a lot of division, and I think that's a lot of people's like common perceptions of like what identity politics does or how it works. I'm hoping this podcast episode could provide almost a different look into identity politics and how it can actually be a positive thing, and how it can, you know, create language, or it can create a means of communicating for marginalized communities and identities in a way that can like bring us to better understanding and to healing. Someone else said, I understand it, but I overthink. It's not a good thing. I totally get it. I think when it comes to like anything with identity being brought into the conversation, it can get very emotional, and it can become something that becomes very contentious. And I think that in a lot of ways can cause you to overthink yourself, your position, can cause you to overthink like other people's positions. It can overthink like your, it almost like makes you overthink your perception of yourself. Someone else said it creates division in communities. Another person said identity politics are a means of politicians exploiting marginalized communities. So a lot of you guys had very negative perceptions of identity politics, and just kind of a lot of the things that I have definitely seen with identity politics. But I think I don't know, reading Ezra Klein's book, kind of the conversations I've been having in my classes and like conversations that I've been having with people have definitely opened my mind to how identity politics can be a tool. I think at the end of the day, politics doesn't really happen in a vacuum. It's heavily, heavily influenced by what's happening in society and culture. And so that's why I really think it's important to examine the way identity politics affects our culture and our society. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's conversation. Make sure to follow Disclaimers Aside on Instagram so you guys don't miss out. And make sure to subscribe to this podcast. Check out the show notes for all the resources that I have, and I will chat with you guys in my next episode.